This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is Kenneth Blackwell, former Secretary of State for the state of Ohio, and he's also out with another best-selling book entitled Resurgent, How Constitutional Conservatism Can Save America. His co-author is Ken Klukowski, and together they collaborated not that long ago on the bestseller, The Blueprint. And Ken, it's great to have you with us again. Thank you for your time.
Oh, it's great to be with you.
Well, this book is a little bit dire and a little bit hopeful. It talks about where America might be headed if things don't change soon, both in terms of fiscally, in terms of our social bearings, our faith bearings, and also for national security. There are also some pretty harsh words for the Republican Party in here, and I want to talk about a number of different things. First of all, you mentioned that the Republican Party deserves quite a bit of blame for the mess that we find ourselves in right now, perhaps from your perspective, not as much as the Democrats, but you point out the fact that, for the most part, Republican leaders have not been true conservatives. Explain why.
Well, the table was set for President Obama's power grab by Republicans in the last 2 years of the Bush administration. Between the two parties, there was a difference searching for a distinction. What we're asking that the Republican Party does, as the party labeled the conservative party in America, is that we go back to that well-defined system of governance in which government derives all of its powers directly or indirectly from the people. You know, one of the original signers of the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, Congressman James Wilson, said that our system of government is one that is where the people are masters, not government. Our analysis in the book starts from the indisputable fact that we are on a path of governance where government is the master, and that the path has led us to a path of great national debt that has posed us with three crises. It's a moral crisis because of the intergenerational theft that we are participating in. It is a national security crisis because of how much of our debt China holds, and it is an economic crisis because total government spending is at about 41% of the GDP, and by any measure, that is economically counterproductive, not producing the sort of innovation and the sort of jobs necessary to put Americans back to work and maintain our prominence as the most prosperous democracy in all of human history. So we're asking the Conservative Party to go back to the founding principles and be a distinctive force against President Obama and a political team that's destined to transform our market economy into a government-controlled economy, and our national philosophy, which was founded upon the primacy of the individual and the supremacy of God, to one founded upon the primacy of the collective good and the supremacy of the central government.
Ken, you and Ken Klukowski point out in this book that you fear a fractured Republican-slash-conservative movement in the 2012 election, likening it even to the election a century earlier when the Bull Moose movement broke away from the Republican Party, allowing Woodrow Wilson to defeat both President Taft and Theodore Roosevelt, who was trying to get back into the White House. You also point out, along with Ken Klukowski, that you believe that obviously the Republican Party needs to stick together. So when you hear things like Mitch Daniels saying we need to call a truce on social issues, to what extent do you fear that the split is likely, and what are the keys to holding it all together?
I think Governor Daniels misspoke when he used that call for a truce, when he should have been ready to call out and say, you know, all hands on deck. We have a major, major crisis. Folks who think that we can deal with our national problems without dealing with social issues are mistaken. Let me just give you a quick analysis. If you go back in all of human history and look at authoritarian regimes, totalitarian regimes in government, or big central governments of welfare states, two intermediary institutions that have had to be weakened or destroyed in order for these governments to enlarge their sphere of influence has been the family and the church. These intermediary institutions in our society have been parcel of the base and the reason for our independence. And when those institutions are strong, it gives us a basis for independence and limited government. Right now, we're going head first into a government or a cultural orientation that is just foolish. I mean, we are rapidly becoming a culture where earning money doesn't entitle you to it, but wanting money does. And as a consequence of the breakdown in the family and the lessening of the moral influence of the church, we now see a democracy or a people that are hooked on government largesse, and it's becoming more difficult for them to make the decision to be on the track of independence and individual liberty.
You make a really interesting point very early in the book, because you point out that in the three different parts of the conservative movement, you have those who say, well, get the fiscal house in order, small government spending, that's all that really matters. How you feel about the other stuff doesn't matter. Same thing potentially with national security hawks. But you mentioned that one of the reasons that the government has expanded so rapidly in the past couple of generations is the failure of the family. And now when we're at a point where 4 out of 10 births are out of wedlock, how do you deal with that at the same time you're trying to radically reduce the size and scope of government?
Well, again, you can't deal with downsizing government and limiting its scope if, in fact, you perpetuate a disrespect for the essentiality of strong families in our culture of independence and freedom. Again, we have to restore the work ethic. I think the modern welfare state is operating on four wrong-headed ideas. The first is that the government can run the economy better than markets and individual decisions. The second is that government workers and professionals can make better decisions about our families than we can. The third, as I've mentioned before, that the work ethic is old-fashioned and outdated. And the fourth is this rush towards moral relativism and the destruction of some of the moral absolutes that have been the bedrock of our exceptionalism as a country. I talk about the Declaration of Independence being the frame that holds our Constitution, and in that second paragraph of the Declaration of Independence, where it talks about self-evident truth, it basically makes the case that our human rights are not grants from government, they're gifts from God. And so when you try to run God and faith out of the public square, you open the door for an expansive, intrusive government, because you basically say that men and women can't make moral and intelligent decisions within their own conscience and within the moral framework of the family and communities.
Ken, there's a chapter in this book that says, God save this honorable court. How close are we? Are we basically a heartbeat away from a court that would not necessarily block some of what you consider the more radical elements of the Obama agenda?
Oh, absolutely. We are one vote away on big issues of the day, where there's a clash of worldviews between those judicial activists on the court and those who are more originalists in their orientation, is one vote. And all too often that one vote is Justice Kennedy. So we have big issues, whether it's Second Amendment issues, whether it's Obamacare. It's coming down to one vote, and that's the Kennedy vote. And if the president is given the opportunity to shape the court with a second term, he's going to put us on a path of a court that believes not in the original intent of the Constitution, but in shaping the court and the country in their activist image.
Very quickly, before we let you go, you lay out very clearly in the book what you think is necessary to not only win for conservatives in 2012, but to turn this nation in a proper direction once that election victory would be achieved. Now, do you believe clearly that it will happen?
Yes, I do. I believe that there's an energy at the grassroots level being put forth by Tea Party activists and concerned citizens alike. America, in its almost 235 years of existence, has been an exceptional nation, but we are not a nation that are exempt from debt limits or moral limits. And I think good, hardworking Americans understand this, and they're going to speak out at the ballot box in this cycle and use the Constitution, as it has been used in the past, to be a stopping wall to any force that wants to transform our country into something that the founders never intended it to be.
Can't let you leave without asking you this. There are stories out there that you're seriously considering a run for the U.S. Senate from Ohio. Where do you stand in that process?
Those stories are true. I am seriously considering.
And I guess that's about all we're going to get right now. We'll await whatever decision you do make on that front. There's still quite a bit of time before you need to make that call. Ken, thank you very much for your time today.
It's so good to be with you.
Kenneth Blackwell served as Secretary of State for the state of Ohio. He's also the co-author of the brand new book, Resurgent, How Constitutional Conservatism Can Save America. His co-author is Ken Klukowski. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.